3.5 hours and see people worshiping much the way we do at Keysville. And if you have opportunity, like I say, it's not much over 3 hours, come see us. We have a little less than half the people, so visitors are very much appreciated to our congregation. Well, for a message this morning, I would like to start out by you thinking of just a little bit what it would be like. You maybe have read some of these stories of January Sixers or people that prayed in front of abortion clinics where the FBI comes and knocks down the door of their house. They're in the middle of the night sleeping, suddenly woke up, and they're hauled off. Their family would not see them again. And maybe that's the closest we can get to this scenario in our minds. But my thought would be this morning is, if you knew that something like that could potentially happen, what would you share with the people around you? What would you tell them? What would you think that would be important to say to your family members, your friends, that you have only 3 hours until this would happen? If you had a countdown timer, you knew you had 3 hours left, and later you may possibly never see them again, or you may possibly be killed. Well, would you make sure that there's things that you could say? Well, okay, it kind of brings your thoughts into focus. What am I going to do with that 3 hours of time that I have? Would it be making sure that $1,000 that somebody owed you on a back bill that you just couldn't collect on, like, I'm going to give him one last call and get a chance to get that money. What good's that going to do you? Or maybe it would be making sure that you left everybody know how these important things that you've done in life. You've accomplished this, you went here, you did this. Maybe you would, there's people that would like to do those sort of things. They want to put up a memorial to their accomplishments so that people for sure wouldn't forget about them once they're gone. Or maybe you have some other thing that you've just really wanted, an adventure or something that you really wanted to do that you could accomplish. But I think for the people of God, it's a completely different focus. If we know that we have a limited amount of time, we would focus on really what matters, eternal values, eternal perspective. And we would want to share with those that we love, we would want to share a message of hope to them, something that's brought us consolation in life. We could say things that would comfort those that we're leaving. Maybe we would want to give a little bit of wisdom or a little bit of insight, something that we've figured out along the way to help them out in their Christian life, that we would share with our family and say, this will bring you true joy and peace. Or maybe we would have a story or an object lesson that would be kind of the last thing in their mind that they would remember us by. And Jesus is the one that we're talking about this morning. He's the one that did this. I want to turn to John 13. We read this at feet washing. We just had communion at our church. And we kind of talk about this in relation to the feet washing ceremony. And then we put it away for another 6 months and talk about it again. But I'd really like to focus on a little bit what this passage is about. Jesus knew he was the man that had these 3 hours. He only had 3 hours left. We're going to say 3 hours. It could have been a little more or less, but he had this limited amount of time to share a very important concept with his disciples. And he really, I feel like his time was honed in on. He was sharing communion, feet washing, and of course baptism, are kind of the three ordinances that we see Jesus doing in his life. And this was kind of the last piece that he put in place for his disciples. And I've titled the message this morning, Happy Brotherhood Servants. So when we look at this passage here, I want to just start by reading John 13, verse 1. And then we're going to skip down to the last part and read verse 17, the section that we normally read at feet washing time. So verse 1 says, Now before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. We jump down to verse 17. He says, If you know these things, happy are you if you do them. So what I want to pull out here is he had love for these people. These were people that were really close to him, and he wanted to give them a special thing, a special gift a solution, we could say, to brotherhood love that would bring them happiness. And we think that there's a lot of things in this world that could bring us happiness, but this is all these verses in between, which we'll get to in a second. He knew that's what it would take to bring them happiness. One of the things. So, I don't know much about your church, and I doubt I'm going to bring this message to my home congregation. And I brought this message last Sunday evening to a congregation very similar that I did not know the people there. But I know enough about people, and God knows enough about people, that I'm pretty sure there's probably a Peter that goes to this church. We're thinking about the disciples here. I'm going to go down through some of the disciples and a little bit that we know about their personality. So we know Peter. There's probably Peter goes here, and you might know him. He does a lot of talking. He gives a lot of Sunday school answers, and he likes to try getting out of the boat once in a while, getting in some adventures. He's the one that's always like, let's go do this. We can do it. Let's try it. I want to try something new. He's the adventurous type of person, but things don't always work out so well for him. Sometimes he ends up sinking whenever he thought he was going to walk on water, or sometimes he gets his mouth in trouble and commits to more than he can actually accomplish. And we know this person. So you probably also have a Thomas that goes here. Maybe he does less talking than Peter. And maybe he's a doubtful person. He kind of is a little bit skeptical. He's got to figure things out. And he's really puzzled by things. And he ponders over these things. He's kind of quiet and just not really sure. And maybe he's into these conspiracy theories where he thinks that the earth is flat and everybody just doesn't have that quite figured out. And maybe man never went to the moon. They faked the whole thing. And he's kind of doubting whether that really happened. He thinks maybe the Rothschilds or the Rockefellers run the world and they're secretly manipulating everything for financial gain, all the wars and things that happen because of them. And you can think of people like this that get into these ruts of things. There's probably a Philip that goes here. He's a nice fella. He invites his friends. He went to Nathaniel and said, Nathaniel, we've met a new fella. He's the man. This is Jesus. Come over here and meet him. And Philip was an interesting fella as well. He's a man that shows up. He was there to help feed the 5,000 and Jesus, I think he was the one that Jesus asked, how are we going to feed these people? And he started doing some math in his head and said, what, 200 pennyworth's not going to accomplish this. How is this going to happen? And he had his own thoughts about things. But then we see later in life, and all these men, of course, this was before they had the Holy Spirit. But the Holy Spirit didn't change their personality. I just want you to think about that. The Holy Spirit changes us and makes us a more workable person. But they still had these personalities to deal with. But Philip, I look over here in chapter 14, sometimes he just didn't get it. He was over here in chapter 14, if we turn to verse 8, Philip was a man that maybe some people had to really slowly explain it and point it out to him, because Philip saith him, the Lord show us the Father, and it sufficeth us. And Jesus saith unto him, have I been so long time with you, and yet hast thou not known me, Philip? He that seen me has seen the Father. So we have this man that was just, he should have understood. He should have, at least Jesus assumed he should have, that he was seeing God right then and there. So then we have a Nathaniel that probably goes here. Nathaniel goes to church, and he's the man that says it how he sees it. He doesn't care about your feelings all that much. He's going to tell you. If he thinks you're doing something foolish, he's going to tell you, why, that's really a stupid move. What you should have done, you could do, why wouldn't you do this? He was the man that said, can any good thing come out of Nazareth? And when he's not happy about it, he's sure to let you know and set you straight on it. And there might be a James go here. Probably there is. He's a good man, but he's a man that when he sees injustice, he wants to call down fire and straighten it out. And he gets, and I think all of us should have a little bit in this, where we see injustice and we really wish that the suffering and the things that are happening should be straightened out a little bit. He was one of the sons of thunder. And then we have John. John goes here. He's a little more humble than James, but he still wanted to have a place. They wanted one to be on the right hand and one to be on the left hand. There's men. I mean, men are into this. We want to climb the social ladder. We kind of want to accomplish. We want to have our business go well. We want to be the most successful carpenter or farmer or whatever it is that you do. You want to be good at it. And he wanted to make sure he was up there near the top. So, and then we have Matthew that goes here. He's the man that manages the money, and he understands he's the tax collector. Not tax collector, he might be the accountant that knows, runs the numbers, and he understands how to make money work for him. And he either manages money or money manages him, and you can kind of decide who Matthew is and whether he's being managed by his money. And hopefully there's not a Judas here. I hope not, but he's the man that's faking it. And he says all the right words, but he's got other ulterior motives going on. So maybe you're a combination of these people. Maybe you're one or two or three of them all rolled in one person. But on the other side of the house, there's a Mary that goes here, I'm sure. She's the one that would sit down and journal or have a cup of coffee with a friend or spend some time reading a book when maybe your house is not the cleanest house and around, and maybe there are some things that should be taken care of there. And then there's the Marthas that are always busy, and they don't have time for anybody else's agenda. They're busy on their own thing. They've got a whole bunch of cooking and cleaning to do, and they've got lots of things to accomplish, and I'm too busy to take care of that. We'll talk to them later, and I'll let the phone ring. We're going to take care of that another time. And maybe there's a Dorcas that goes here and doing some things for other people. So we have all of these personalities, and it's so much potential for things to go wrong in these situations where we have this clash of why doesn't Mary do this and why doesn't Martha do that and why doesn't Thomas do this and why doesn't Peter do this, and we all kind of have this thing. And Jesus knew that that's what happens in these situations where we kind of get at odds with each other. But he picked these people out. He chose these as the people that were his disciples, the people that would represent his kingdom to the world, the people that would start churches and would build and move out and preach the gospel. But he knew that Peter was going to need Thomas, and Thomas was going to need Peter, and Nathanael was going to need James, and James was going to need whatever combination there. These people kind of balanced each other out and provided perspective and worked together in a way that if you had just all timid people or you had all adventuresome people, you would not get that balance. And I think about, my dad said many a time that all of us are a little bit eccentric. And if we have a couple eccentrics, I'd enjoy mechanics, but an engine's kind of, it would shake apart if you didn't have a counterweight to counterbalance it. All the pistons going around at high rate of speed, and you would have a problem. But we balance each other out. We can kind of meet somewhere in the middle. Well, let's read the rest of this chapter and make a few applications here. John 13, we'll just start back at verse 1 and read to verse 17. Now, before the feast of the Passover, when Jesus knew that his hour was come, that he should depart out of this world unto the Father, having loved his own which were in the world, he loved them unto the end. And supper being ended, the devil having now put in the heart of Judas Iscariot, Simon's son, to betray him, Jesus, knowing that the Father hath given all things into his hands, and that he was come from God and went to God, he riseth from supper, and laid aside his garments, and took a towel, and girded himself. After that he poureth water into a basin, began to wash the disciples' feet, and to wipe them with the towel wherewith he was girded. Then cometh he to Simon Peter, and Peter saith unto him, Lord, dost thou wash my feet? He could have kept quiet here and just left it happen like everyone else did, but he didn't. We talked about Peter's personality. Jesus answered and said unto him, What I do thou knowest not now, but thou shalt know hereafter. And Peter saith unto him, Thou shalt never wash my feet. Jesus answered him, If I wash thee not, thou hast no part with me. Simon Peter saith unto him, Lord, not my feet only, but also my hands and head. Jesus saith unto him, He that is washed needeth not save to wash his feet, but is clean every whit, and ye are clean, but not all. For he knew who should betray him, therefore said he, Ye are not all clean. So after he had washed their feet and had taken his garments and sat down again, he said unto them, Know ye what I have done unto you? Ye call me Master and Lord, and ye say well, for so I am. If I then, your Lord and Master, have washed your feet, you also ought to wash one another's feet. For I have given you example that ye should do as I have done to you. Verily, verily, I say unto you, the servant is not greater than his Lord, neither is he that is sent greater than he that sent him. If ye know these things, happy are ye if ye do them. Now I realize we're just going to focus on one aspect of good brotherhood relations this morning. There's Matthew 18. There's the fact of having good communication with people. And there's the story in Acts 15 where church leaders brought rest to the congregation on the question of circumcision and things, where things need to be resolved. But we're talking about how to make practical the thought of feet washing, serving other people, and how it brings us happiness. So I only have two basic points for this morning to make this practical that I see in this passage. And the first one would be that church does not work very well when we're trying to decide out who's going to be the greatest. Right before this, these disciples were going at it again. And we read it in the Gospel several times where there was an argument among them. Who's going to be the greatest? Who's going to get to sit at Jesus' right hand and left hand? The other disciples got really offended by this whole thing of who was going to get to sit right at the top. And if that's the way we're going to function in church, we're sitting around figuring out whether it's this man here or this man here or this man over here is the greatest. It's going to make it a little bit hard to have peaceful relations. There's just some rivalries and things that you see happen. Just a funny little one that a fellow shared with me recently. There was two neighbors that were farmers, and they both had this little competition of who got up earlier in the morning and got their day started, and it kept getting earlier and earlier and earlier. And finally, the one fellow went down in the middle of the night at 2 a.m. and flipped on his kitchen light and his barn lights or whatever it was so that the neighbor thought he was out milking his cows, and he went back to bed. So we had this little rivalry going on just to see who's going to have the biggest, who's going to have the best, who's going to do this and that. And I know of other situations where one situation in particular that seemed interesting to me is these two men were kind of out competing each other. One fella built a shop on his property, and the other fella, he was building one like a couple months later, and he made sure his was a little bit longer and a little bit, just a couple square feet bigger than his competitor, I guess you would call it. And you just got to outdo the other person. There's always something bigger. There's always something better to have. But the people that are always striving for the biggest and always striving to be on top and trying to be the first one, it reminds me of children. We're not much different than our children in some ways. We see sometimes our children, I don't know how you do fellowship meal here, but at Keysville we do it a little differently, but you go to fellowship meal and they rush to be the first one of the ones in the food line, or they rush to make sure they're the first one down to the Sunday school room, or the head of the line somewhere, or they're always letting their friends know about how they got the biggest and the best, and our tractor's better than yours, or my dad's pickup's better than yours, he could pull yours backwards, or whatever, and we're all in this little thing of back and forth. But they're bragging about this stuff, and maybe we're a little more mature, we don't do that, but to the people that are always doing that, do they have lots of friends and people say, you know what, that's a really good brother. I just love being around him. He just humbles me in so many ways that it's good for me. So do they have lots of friends? Do they have a lot of people that just really want to be there? So, just thinking about this, how do we find happiness in brotherhood relationships? Well, the world doesn't help us at all in these things because they feed into this whole idea that you can accomplish the best, you can be the best at this, you can, and if you see advertisements out there for anything, whether it's vehicles or whether it's some new tool or whatever, you're going to accomplish more in a day, you're going to be happier if you have this thing. And it's all about you. You deserve a good vacation. You deserve peace and happiness. We talked about, what was it, tribulation in the Sunday school lesson this morning. You don't deserve any of that. You just deserve the best of everything. But we need to, the little Sunday school song says, Jesus first, yourself last, and others in between. So that happens whenever we have a vote, we have a situation, we give our idea. Sure, we share at brothers' meetings. Hey, we would like to, I think it should be done this way. And I don't know what the vote is. I should find out later about that. So I think outreach should be done this way, and I think outreach should be done this way, and we each give our opinions. But after a while, we need to submit and be united and say, you know what, my idea obviously wasn't the good one because this one over here won. And I think about that sometimes. I remember a story that my dad told or someone where a man was outvoted on a church project, but he was the very first one there with a chainsaw or a hammer or whatever was happening. I think they were taking down some trees that he didn't want taken down at church. He thought they were still in good shape, and others were worried it was going to fall on the building. And he was the first one there with the chainsaw. So along with this is the idea of taking interest in others and showing them some love. And make him some sacrifices for the good of other people. And Jesus is telling us here that when we do these things, we're going to be happier. It's not about the feet washing. Feet washing was kind of, we kind of take this, it's an odd practice to us because we don't do this on a daily basis. But this was something that happened every day in their culture. It'd be like taking out the trash around your house or something. It's just something that somebody needs to do. And generally it gets assigned to the little boy that maybe doesn't have the skills to do whatever other jobs are around the house you give him. And that's probably what happened here. The servant boys did the feet washing. But Jesus is saying that the big men, it doesn't hurt them. In fact, it's going to make them happy if they get down and do some of the difficult stuff, which kind of goes right into the next point. My only other point here is that churches, marriages, families, you put this, whatever, workplace, do not function properly when the leader of the church or the home or the boss or whatever is demanding to be served. So if I say, you know what, I'm the boss of my house or I'm the boss of my business, and I'm going to tell you what to do and you what to do and you what to do, and I'm going to sit back and answer the phone and play games on my computer, whatever, you name it, fill in the blank. I'm going to do something else. I'm going to enjoy going out fishing or whatever it is that you like to do, and I'm going to have everyone else working for me. Jesus says that the best way that's going to work is if you get down and do the lowly job that no one else wants to do. Now, that doesn't mean you always do the job as the boss or as the father of the home, the church leader, whatever it is. There are times when other people are going to have to do the less desirable jobs, but for me, one of my worst jobs, I guess I'm going to admit, is like climbing through a hot attic and pulling a wire through fiberglass insulation, and you're sticky and itchy, and it's just terrible. It's like, but sometimes you just go do it. I'm just using that as a practical example. Just because you're the boss or the foreman of the job doesn't mean that sometimes you're not going to have to be the one that does that kind of stuff. Or there's fire or flood cleanup, and it's great to run the backhoe. Everybody's wanting to run the skid loader or whatever it is, but sometimes you just need to run the dirt shovel. And I ran across this in my studies when I was reading about some practical applications to this. And the concept is that there's no one fighting to run the dirt shovel. It's like, oh, I really wanted to run that dirt shovel. Everybody's like, hey, I'll run the skid loader for you. I'll take care of that part. But you're never going to have to fight for that lowly position is the point. And maybe that's what the happiness comes in. There's no clashing of, I wanted to do that job. How come you get all the fun jobs? So sometimes we just need to do the lowly task that no one else wants to do. And sure, all of these things make us weary and we get tired and we're like, do I have to do this again? I was the one the last time to run the shovel, and we think about these things. These are all practical things, and you can fill in. I'm just using a few examples that I think about once in a while. But I ran across this as well, and that is, or this thought, that it's hard to be at odds with someone that's helped you out. Whenever someone does something nice for you, it's a lot harder to fight with them. And we think about this, just a practical example or example that we look up to. We all kind of admire Dirk Willems. He was run across the ice and his pursuer was fell through, and he turned around and went back and rescued the fella. And I guess I'm really one of these. That would have been tough. I probably would have kept running and say God's judging him for trying to chase after me. But we look at him and say, what happened out of that is the man that was out after his life turned around and said, let this man go free. He is a good man. I want him to. Suddenly, people that are at odds with each other, when somebody does something nice for you, suddenly you're like, you know what, that guy's not as mean as I thought he was. He's not as selfish as I thought he was. He's not as, our perceptions suddenly change from Dirk Willems is a guy that deserves to die to he's a man that I want to save. I want to stand in his place and take, well, we know the end of the story, ended up and died anyway, but it wasn't because of the wishes of his pursuer that that happened. So we think about this and how being helpful and not being demanding to be served can change our relationships. You can probably think of people around that serve other people. I can think of one or two right offhand that if there's a death in a family or if there's a fire or if there's a need of some sort, an urgent situation, they drop whatever they're doing. Sure, they have cows to milk or they have fence to build or they have electrical jobs to take care of. They have cars to repair, whatever your occupation is. There's plenty of work around their house to do. But they're like the Good Samaritan. They stop their job. They don't just walk by on the other side and say, well, too bad for that fella. I really pity him. I mean, he's having a rough situation there. No, they rearrange their whole day, and you would probably not know it, but they rearrange their whole day, and they go out of their way to help those. They have a heart of compassion for those in need and make the sacrifices to make it happen. And generally, at least the person or so that I could think of that fit in this category are not necessarily the most wealthy people around. They do not have a huge bank account. But they have wealth in a way that is unmeasurable. They have friends, they have families that will show up. And you think about it, a person that gives and sacrifices when it's their turn, all the people that are going to show up and help them when they have a fire, when they have a death, because they're like, you know what? I remember that family. They came and helped me when I was in need. I'm going to make sure that I go and help them out, give them some finances, give them some food, help the cleanup, whatever it is. There'll be an army show up for those kind of people. Well, I just want to use the story of Dorcas here just a little bit because this is one example that I thought of that's here in Scripture, and that's in Acts 9. We have this little story about Peter raising her to life. And sure, there were many other people that died in the church, but this lady had served, and she had built a huge crowd of friends that cared about her. So we'll just read this little story in Acts 9, starting at verse 36. Now there was at Joppa a certain disciple named Tabitha, which by interpretation is called Dorcas. This woman was full of good works and alms deeds, which she did. And it came to pass in those days that she was sick and died, and when they had washed, they laid her in an upper chamber. And for as much as Lydda was nigh unto Joppa, and the disciples had heard that Peter was there, they sent unto him two men, desiring him that he would not delay to come unto them. Then Peter rose and went with them, and when he was come, he brought them into the upper chamber, and all the widows stood by him, weeping and showing the coats and garments which Dorcas made while she was with them. But Peter put them all forth and kneeled down and prayed, and turning him to the body, said, Tabitha, arise. And she opened her eyes, and when she saw Peter, she sat up. And he gave her his hand and lifted her up, and when he had called the saints and widows, presented her alive. And it was known throughout all Joppa, and many believed in the Lord. And it came to pass that he tarried many days in Joppa with one Simon, a tanner. Well, the main point I wanted here is Dorcas was busy serving. She was out making coats. She saw a family that said, you know what? There's a poor family in our town that they're not going to have coats for the winter for their children. And I'm going to make them a few. I'm going to see that they get some. I'm going to sew up something for someone else. And she was looking out for the good of other people. And when it came time for someone to look out for her, maybe she got sick because she was working day and night. And maybe she should have taken a little more rest. We don't know the whole story. But in any case, she had a group of people that cared enough about her to find out where Peter was, go get him over here, and do something good for this lady. She's done a lot of things, and she deserves this. And these are just some little points that we can take and apply in our lives. Are we trying to be the greatest? Or are we trying to be served? Or are we willing to serve? This is just an area in my life that I'm challenged in my own life that I want to grow in. What's really going to bring us happiness? Is it going to be more money? Is it going to be more toys? Is it going to be more fun things, more activities that we could go out and we could do this and we can do that? Well, we know the things that bring lasting happiness are the things that Jesus tells us to do. So my challenge would be serving church, serving family, it's not going to get you huge popularity and fame. But it is just that serving in humble ways, just doing nice things for other people, sharing with them in a time of need, doing the dirty work that no one else wants to do. These little things are little ways that we can bring down this strife and contention in our churches, in our marriages, in our families. And we just see that here in John 13, where Jesus said, essentially, in verse 17, it says, if ye know these things, but if you read it in another translation, it's basically saying, you already know the right thing to do. In your heart, you're getting that little urge that I probably should go out and help this brother, or I should probably sacrifice a little bit of my finances to help out in brotherhood assistance, or whatever it is, you already know what to do. Go do it, and you will be happy. Let's kneel for prayer.